This podcast of NPR's On Point with Tom Ashbrook is a production of WBUR Boston.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Big noise out of a little courtroom in Dover, Pennsylvania yesterday. After weeks of remarkable testimony on science and Darwin and evolution and intelligent design, federal judge John Jones III, Republican, and George W. Bush appointee, ruled that intelligent design is not science, that it has no place in a public school's biology classroom, that it is a thinly veiled religious teaching of creationism and Christianity. It's a fine belief, he said, but it's not science, period. There is jubilation today in the halls of science, lamentation in the intelligent design camp, and the people of Dover, well, they had already voted out the school board that voted in intelligent design. Up next on Point, God, science, and a courtroom in Pennsylvania. We're joined right now from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, by Lori Goodstein, religion reporter for the New York Times. She closely followed the Dover case. Lori, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
So give us a sense of this judge's opinion. What is he saying here?
Well, he says very decisively that intelligent design does not fit the standards as most scientists accept them of science, that it is a religion-based theory, that it grew out of the creationism and creation science movement. And he says that it's disingenuous to try to call it anything but. So it's a very broad decision.
Remind us of the circumstances that brought this case to court.
The school board in Dover, Pennsylvania, which is just about just a little way south of Harrisburg, mm-hmm. It's a suburban community, voted last October to have their students read a statement at the beginning of biology class, ninth grade biology class, mm-hmm. Saying that evolution is just a theory, that there are gaps and problems in the theory that they should be aware of, and that intelligent design is an alternative that they should look at. And if they're interested in this, they could go to the high school library and check out copies of the books of Pandas and People.
This is which supports the intelligent design view. And we've got, by the way, that paragraph that the teachers were asked to read at our website, onpointradio.org. Who were the school board members who were pushing this? What do we know about their background from the trial, and publicity around the case?
Well, in fact, there were a very small minority of the school board members who were very motivated about this. There were a few who had talked about wanting to teach creationism on equal par with evolution. But then when they learned about Supreme Court rulings and legal precedent saying that creationism could not be taught in school, they sort of landed on the idea of intelligent design and substituted that, and this all came out in testimony in the trial. They thought that they were doing something very modest by just reading this statement at the beginning of class.
Mm-hmm.
And as they will say, we never taught intelligent design. We didn't insert religion in science class. We were just trying to tell students, look, there's another idea out there.
Some parents didn't like it. They brought suit. What was the pushback in the community?
Well, there were, in fact, 11 parents who signed on to the suit. And the community became very, very divided over this. In fact, a real indication of that was that they had school board elections. Just last month in November. And there was a surprising result when the school board that had voted for intelligent design, all those members were thrown out and replaced by a slate that opposed intelligent design.
This is a pretty Republican suburb, as you describe it. It was a Republican school board slate, essentially, that had voted, pushed in intelligent design, a kind of a Democratic slate that now sits on the board. The community said no thank you even before the judge ruled.
That's right. And in part, they ran on those tickets because of technicalities. It's not that, you know, those people weren't necessarily Republicans or Democrats. But what it did say was that the community did not like having their resources used in this fight. They thought it was a distraction from some of the educational issues and finance issues that their school district had to face.
The judge here, John E. Jones III, a lifelong Republican, a George W. Bush appointee, he's already saying in his opinion, don't call me an activist, I'm not. You guys are the activists. But by background, not clear where he would come down.
Well, he doesn't have a long record because he hasn't sat on the bench very long, and he's very close to some Republicans who have spoken out in favor of intelligent design. I mean, one of the senators who backed him is Rick Santorum,
very conservative Pennsylvania senator.
Right, who's advocated the teaching equal time of intelligent design.
Tom Ridge, former Pennsylvania governor, big supporter of John Jones.
That's right, and unanimously approved by the Senate. This was a non-controversial judicial appointee of President Bush.
So,
but you know, after sitting through the trial, I mean, Judge Jones, I observed him in the courtroom. He listened very, very carefully, took notes as the trial went on, and allowed a wide range of testimony. He could have limited this case just to the school board's actions in Dover, but it was very clear that he wanted to engage the larger issue of the validity of intelligent design.
Lori Goodstein, religion reporter for The New York Times. She spoke with us from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. I want to welcome right now from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, Eugenie Scott. She is executive director of the National Center for Science Education, an organization of scientists and teachers working to improve the teaching of evolution. Eugenie Scott, you must be very pleased with this decision.
Oh, we are ecstatic. This has been a decision that went beyond our greatest expectations. The judge made us all very, very happy.
How do you see the impact of this decision? You know, there are initiatives underway in many states and many communities to push intelligent design into the science curriculum. This is just one among many, many. So what's the impact?
This decision will have a lot of impact because it's such a strongly argued and complete and thorough analysis of the intelligent design situation from the historical standpoint, from a scientific standpoint, from a legal standpoint. And what I think this will do is put on notice a lot of these school districts around the country who think, well, gee, I think it'd be nice to teach intelligent design. Let's just let our students know that there's other views out there. If they read this decision, they will discover, pardon me, that intelligent design is not just a vague, well, can't we tell students that God did something? It's a very specific religious view that promotes one very specific religious ideology, and that has no place in the public schools. Another way that this decision is going to be very important is that it will provide a very useful shield for teachers to stand behind. If a parent or a school board member or an administrator says, gee, why don't we teach intelligent design to balance out evolution? A teacher could say, well, why don't you read this decision by a federal district court judge who will tell you why intelligent design is not science and why it is illegal to teach it in our public schools.
Eugenie,
so this is a very important decision for a number of reasons.
I was struck by the details of this particular community where teachers did not feel they had that shield, where specific individual teachers who testified in the trial had felt really pushed and strong-armed into doing this explicitly against their own better judgment as science teachers.
You know, I think a lot of people don't understand that kindergarten through 12th grade teachers have very little academic freedom. Basically, the way the law works, if you sign a contract in the school district to work for that school district, you agree to teach their curriculum. And if they tell you to teach evolution, you teach it. If they tell you to not teach evolution, you don't teach it. If they tell you to teach intelligent design, you have to teach it or you quit. Now, in the case of Dover, they took the third option, which was to file suit.
Let me ask you, there's already been pushback from the intelligent design camp saying this is the imposition of evolution dogma in public classrooms, and this is censorship of the intelligent design view.
Yeah, I think that's quite amusing. It's interesting because one of the primary spokespeople for intelligent design, William Dembski, a philosopher of science, was quoted in one of the national newspapers today, and I think making an extremely good point. He said, well, it's the job of the intelligent design proponents to demonstrate the worth of this perspective to the scientific community, not in the public arena. If intelligent design is worth anything as science, it first has to convince the scientific community. It has been an abject failure at doing that because there really is no perspective. There's no there. there is no intelligent design, quote, theory.
Is the battle won here from your perspective, or is this going to be an unending American conflict, struggle?
Well, this is a huge victory. This is a major battle that went the way of science and science education. The war is not over.
Eugenie Scott, Executive Director of the National Center for Science Education, joining us from Harrisburg. Thanks very much for being with us.
You're certainly welcome.
I want to hear from the other side of this argument. William Murray joins us from Fredericksburg, Virginia. He is chairman of the Religious Freedom Coalition. It's a Christian public policy group. Mr. Murray, thanks for joining us.
Great to be on with you today, Tom.
Your reaction to Judge Jones's ruling yesterday?
Well, we have a court deciding public policy and deciding what is proper speech, what is not proper speech, what courses inside of a public school should be allowed, what shouldn't be allowed, what speech should be allowed, what textbook should be allowed.
But isn't that the court's job to decide what works under the U.S. Constitution?
That is the problem between that is the whole discussion now with the nomination of Samuel Alito. Is do we want a federal court system that deals on constitutional issues, or do we want a court system that deals with ideological issues?
But the Constitution says, First Amendment, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion. Surely the public school is an expression.
What religion was established here? Judaism, Buddhism, Confucianism, Muslim? What was the established
religion? Judge Jones pretty much said this was creationism and Christianity in the guise of a scientific theory. That was his opinion.
That was his determination, and that is my entire point. You know, if the elected officials of this school system wanted something taught in the schools and the taxpayers were willing to pay for it, then it should be in the school. If they want to teach horseback riding in El Paso, Texas, that's their business. It doesn't matter what the city dwellers in New York City think, and if they think you shouldn't ride horses, that doesn't matter.
But Judge Jones is a Pennsylvania boy, and he said this is mixing up church and state.
I know that, but this is my point. The establishment of religion clause was the establishment of a specific religion. There was no establishment of a specific religion here. It didn't tell people to read the Bible. It didn't tell people to bow to Mecca. There was no real establishment of religion issue.
Well, then why are you, as chairman of the Religious Freedom Coalition, so concerned about it if it wasn't about religion?
Well, because we're for freedom of expression and freedom of ideas. We're a conservative organization, and that's what conservative organizations do. We want all people to be able to express their views, and we want all views exposed. We want people. You know, we're not for censoring college campuses. We're not for shouting down speakers because of what they believe.
But what if it's not science? Should it be in the science class curriculum?
In the schools, we're not for those things.
But what if it's not science? Why not teach it in religious class, in religion?
Well, first of all, the judge isn't going to allow that either, because we have a very, very social... most of the judges in that we have in the United States today are not oriented toward defining law. They're oriented toward defining social issues.
Mr. Murray, thanks for joining us.
Great to be on with you today, Tom.
I want to turn to another mother of high school students, in fact, the named mother, as it happens, in Kitzmiller versus Dover. Tammy Kitzmiller joins us from Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania. She was the lead plaintiff in the case decided yesterday. Tammy Kitzmiller, thank you so much for being with us.
Hello. How you doing?
We're great. There was a lot of testimony here and a long path to travel. How do you feel now that it's decided?
Oh, I'm walking on air. This has been a great decision, certainly a great decision for science. We couldn't have asked for anything better.
Your daughter Jessica was in class. I think she walked out of a class.
Yes, she opted out of hearing the statement.
And what motivated you and the other parents who joined with you to bring this suit in the first place?
It was a feeling that things just were not right. The decision that the school board made, we all very much felt it was a very religious decision.
We had one of the school board members, Mr. Buckingham, saying in a school board meeting 2,000 years ago, someone died on a cross. Can't someone take a stand for him? But then in the courtroom denied that this was a matter of religion. Are there hard feelings in Dover after all this, Tammy?
Well, actually, I haven't been out and about in the community too much since last evening. I'm sure there will be hard feelings for a while, and again, as I stated yesterday, I would hope that the healing process would begin.
When the school board that had voted for this was pretty much tossed out, did you see that? I mean, I guess that's the reflection of how the majority in town felt about this. Do you think it's settled now, for Dover at least?
I can't speculate. I would hope that it's settled for Dover. Obviously, people have their opinions, and some opinions will never be changed. But again, like I said, I really hope that the community will pull together and just support the new school board and show the kids that this issue is resolved.
What did your children, your daughters, say after they heard this decision?
They both were very proud, and they thought the judge, you know, just ruled in the best possible way that he could.
Judge John E. Jones III, there, Tammy Kitzmiller, named lead plaintiff in Kitzmiller versus Dover. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Joining me now in the studio is Jay Wexler, professor of law at Boston University. He's written extensively about intelligent design and the First Amendment. Jay Wexler, thanks for being with us.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Also with us from New Haven, Connecticut, is Theodore Ruger, professor of law at the University of Pennsylvania. His areas of expertise include constitutional law, teaches a course on religion and law. Theodore Ruger, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Jay, first to you, what do you make of this ruling? How big, how important?
Well, it's a very broad ruling, and I think it is quite important. On the one hand, it's just the decision of one district court in Pennsylvania, which means that it has no precedential value for a school district in Kansas or California, so they're free to continue experimenting with intelligent design. On the other hand, this decision is a very well-reasoned, very broad decision that I think will cause these other school districts to think hard about whether they want to go forward.
Theodore Ruger, are we, has the country broken ground here with the specificity with which the judge has looked at what's science and what's not?
Well, I think ground has been broken, and I do want to mention people have rightly described this as a very broad opinion, and it is that, but it is also, as you note, the most specific treatment of these issues that I've read that any district court or higher federal court has dealt with. The judge, by my count, had hundreds of citations to specific factual criteria, whether it be testimony, depositions, 20-year-old drafts of this book, Pandas on People. So it's quite a landmark. Also, I think in terms of the litigation strategy by the plaintiff's lawyers was quite masterful to build this record, and many of the bits of evidence. Some were specific to Dover, but other bits of evidence about the intelligent design movement over the past two decades are generalizable and could be used in future cases.
Jay Wexler, this was a remarkable case for the amount of scientific testimony. I mean, slides of fossils, Kentucky Fried Chicken, chicken wings brought up to show the evolution from dinosaurs to birds. I mean, really got into the nitty-gritty of science.
Yeah, apparently there was almost endless discussion of bacterium flagellum going on in the trial.
The little motorboat outboard on the back of the bacteria that the intelligent design crowd said, this is proof. This is too complex. This could not happen by evolution.
Right. Intelligent design advocates point to a few different things as sort of the best proof for their theory. The flagellum is one. Blood clotting is another. The immune system, human immune system is another. And all of these issues got aired at great length at the trial.
Now, Ted Ruger, this was different in the legal cases before. We haven't really brought science so directly into the classroom. Have I got that right? Into the courtroom, I should say.
Well, that's right. And even in the famous Scopes trial, there was not this degree of specific inquiry into evolution and creationism. So this really was a fact-based or evidence-based decision, I would say, by the judge. He relied heavily on the weeks of testimony he got from expert witnesses.
And where did the weaknesses show up in the intelligent design case as the trial unfolded, Professor Ruger?
Well, one weakness has been mentioned is that, and I'm going to mention another one, but the one that's been mentioned is that the proponents and the witnesses that the intelligent design supporters put on were unable to show that it fit within the standards of scientific inquiry, which then supported the judge's finding that intelligent design was not science. The other finding that fits more closely with the Establishment Clause doctrine, as the Supreme Court has laid it down, goes to the purpose of the original Dover board in enacting this. And the basic law under a couple different tests is that you can't endorse religion or have a purpose to promote religion. And so beyond this inquiry into science, the other inquiry that was very one-sided in the judge's view was what motivated the original Dover school board to enact this intelligent design disclaimer. And he found overwhelming evidence to the effect that there was a religious purpose motivating the school board in this matter.
And Ted Ruger, in a nutshell, we've just got a few seconds here. How much higher would this have to go in the court system to establish precedent that was national rather than local?
I think the change has to come from the Supreme Court. I think that both the purpose test and the Lemon test that Judge Jones applied are well established. Just last year, the Supreme Court said that the Lemon test is still good law. So if change is going to come, it has to come at the highest levels.
Well, this will be a lot of fresh material for hearings on Sam Alito when they come up early in the new year. We'll be watching with the benefit of your observations today. Theodore Ruger at the University of Pennsylvania Law School, we're grateful to you for being with us. Thanks so much for joining us this hour.
Thanks for having me.
And Jay Wexler here with me in the studio, law professor at Boston University. Wonderful to have you. Thanks for your insights today.
Thank you very much.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.